Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Mr. Pacino, like all the greats, you're up in there with Robert De Niro. Are you trying to beat each other on screen? Are you trying to one-up each other?
I don't know about that. I ain't too sure about that. But I can tell you one thing I enjoyed. Working with Marty for the very first time. He's a really nice guy. Very nice guy.
Martin Scorsese.
Yeah!
He didn't have a clue who I was. Believe it or not, he linked with me in so many movies. He didn't know who I was.
You wanna go, you wanna do something together?
Really nice guy. Loves jigsaws too. His jigsaws are incredible.
I got the greatest jigsaw puzzles you'll ever see in your entire life.
A jigsaw?
We could spend a week trying to do this jigsaw puzzle, me and you.
Are you going to do it with him?
Yeah, that seems amazing.
Yeah, it takes 3 weeks. You ready for that?
Let me tell you, a jigsaw puzzle of 45 different South American birds in the Amazon rainforest. And you got to piece it all together. And here's the thing. 25 of those birds, let me tell you, 25 of those birds, they're all red and green. But they got different beaks!
3 weeks in a secluded room. Yeah, it's an experience.
Yellow, blue, purple, pink! You wanna go right now?
I would love to go right now.
Hoo-ha! Let's go!
Oh, I have to interview Mr. Pesci.
Fuck him! Come on, let's go.
Welcome to Free State, everybody. It is an honor to be joined by somebody who perhaps does match Joe Brawley for the way he has engaged audiences on television, knows nothing about the GAA.
And the way he's sort of straddled modern Irish history as a colossus.
Well, how do you know that I don't know anything about the GAA? Just because I don't speak about it? I've been on this planet, on this rock, for 76 years, baby. And you don't think that I don't know about GAA.
I'm sorry.
Some of the greats in this country have participated in this sport. I know this guy over here. This guy stole my gimmick. I tell you, no, but it's great. It's great to be here. It's wonderful. Joe, we're both in the same boat with regards to RTE. We were too good for it. We were too box office for it, baby.
You're too big for it.
Well, that was the problem. We were too big for it. You know, go along with the program, baby. Absolutely not. You know, and that's us. That's who we are. They're craving to get us back. You know, the Rod Little clips are shared on Twitter, on social media, everywhere. The Roy Keane rants everywhere. You know, and that's it. Simple as, you know. 76 years on this planet. And this guy, Dion, who we both did work under the Maximum Media umbrella for a short time. It's great. I used to go over to his desk and annoy him with impressions while he was trying to write an article.
He caught me with that, you know. He rang me one night. And he caught me. I was sure that it was. I was saying, you know, Eamon, how are you? God, you know. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Al Foran, welcome to Free State.
Lads, thank you for having me. Great honour being on.
It's great to have you here. You're busy.
Busy enough, yeah. Busy enough with gigs, social media campaigns and stuff like that.
Babies.
And babies, yeah. 4-year-old and 4-month-old.
And of course supporting Manchester United.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. Listen, you're more than welcome to talk about my Twitter feed of Manchester United agony.
What's the 4-month-old? Is to a boy or girl?
Girl. Two girls. Great. Chloe and Sophia. Chloe being the youngest, Sophia being the oldest.
Fantastic. And both are well.
They're both great. Both healthy young girls. Chloe is, you know, a little buster of a baby. You know, healthy, happy, smiling all the time. That's the beauty of life, really. The 4-year-old's becoming a bit of a character. I'm starting to see...
Surprisingly.
Yeah, starting to see little shades of me in there, you know, and our mammy too. So, yeah.
Brilliant. You're coming to us from... Where were you? The Shelburne, was it you were in?
I was in the Shelburne. I was doing a gig for the Marie Keating Foundation. Did a little 10-15 minute stint. Yeah, bit of fun, bit of crack.
Some of the stuff is extraordinary. I've not heard, you know. I know we have some very good mimics, but some of the stuff is extraordinary. And you know, I spent ages, and I try it out in Dion every now and again. I spent ages trying to do Tyson Fury.
Did you?
Because you know the way you do. You're always a thank me Lord, save me Lord stuff. You know, but the Tyson Fury is spectacular.
I thank me Lord and save you, Jesus Christ. That's what you do, 100%. But for me, there's two different Tyson Fury. So I'm doing the early Tyson Fury when he beat Vladimir Klitschko in 2015. And this was before he got punched in the throat in camp. And then it's kind of a bit more like that, you know, and it's a bit more aggressive. But he's still happy, you know what I mean? Good to be here on the free state. Get up! But you see, what I like to do, if I'm in, I'll just speak in character, sometimes I'm comfortable doing that. If I'm in a live setting, I'll do me, but then I'll move on to his dad, who I find is quite a character. Sometimes takes the spotlight from his son, but likes to exclaim to the world that my son is the greatest fighting man on the planet. One of the greatest fighters you'll ever see. And then we have my other son, Tommy. Yeah, just want to say, absolutely great to be here, 100%. And, yeah, just have to get on to Molly May, so...
Tommy the good-looking one who can't fight.
Tommy the good...
Because, yeah, I mean, the brother can fight.
He can.
And I just wonder, in the pantheon of great heavyweight champions, you know, I don't think there's ever been a fighter who has that sort of combination of size, guile, courage, and like Ali, you know, he truly loves it.
Mm.
I mean, he loves it.
He adores it. Very interesting individual. And you talk about the height. I mean, I was, when I did a show with him there 2 years ago in London, it was one of the last shows that we did. He says he walks around, I'm 6'9", but sometimes I don't feel like it. I feel like I'm about 5'5". I said, what? I said, I don't know, it's just weird, it's just my body shape. I feel strange. I'm looking down at you, but I feel as if I'm the same height as you. I can't even explain it. I was like, okay. But he's just an interesting character.
What are you, about 5'7"?
5'7", 5'8", yeah.
5'7", 5'8".
Small enough. Like.
He's, and I have to say, I really enjoyed your, you put out a video, as I recall at the time, and you were sitting on the sofa together, socialising. Somebody else was taking the video. And you were taking off Tyson Fury.
Yeah, in front of him.
And he was in hysterics of laughter.
I mean, I was very lucky.
They were pinching themselves at how good it was, because there was no discernible difference between the way he was talking.
And were you apprehensive doing that?
Oh, yeah, at first, yeah. But it's kind of like essentially a leap of faith. You know, you're in front of these people. And for me, I know it's kind of sad when... You know, when I say it, but essentially you want the social media engagement. You know, I'm from an era where, you know, I need to put out decent content to make a name for myself. You know, you look at the impressionists, you know, in the last 20 years in this country, the Marios, the Olivers, you know, they essentially made a true radio, you know, and they probably sent tapes and stuff like that. Whereas my generation, myself and Conor Moore, we had to make a name for ourselves through social media. And I think we're very lucky in doing that, in having such a platform. So when I see a person who I can, you know, impersonate, the first thing that comes to my mind, and it's probably invasive to them. I don't know if it is or not, but I'm thinking I should get a video with them doing the impression in front of them.
Because getting it shared on social media, does that depend a lot? There's like a huge difference if the person you're impersonating shares it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Massively so. Yeah. And that's what he did. He constantly shared my content.
Yeah. And he seems to be very down to earth and a lot of fun.
He's very down to earth, yeah. And like when you're on the, because we did the tours with him, and it's not wild or anything like that. He gets up at 8 o'clock every morning, him, his dad, his bodyguard, Brendan, and sometimes his brothers will come along to the shows.
He needs a bodyguard.
He has a bodyguard, Brendan, from Wales, yeah.
Small little fella.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the Terminator, you know.
His bodyguard is essentially his training partner, but he goes for the run in the morning, 8 a.m. I wouldn't go for a run. I'd meet them in the gym. Yeah. But he's back at the hotel that he's staying in. He's in the gym for an hour, and then he goes for breakfast. And, like, doesn't drink much. He's just on these kind of tours to, I suppose, you know, socialise with his friends, you know, his family, people like me.
He has something, you know? I mean, those fights with Deontay Wilder.
Oh, epic.
You know, considering Wilder never been beaten.
Yeah.
You know, a really true, you know, knockout merchant, a knockout specialist, you know, who's sort of, you know, he grazes your chin with his fist and you're gone, and some people have that ability. And I mean, for me there was the unbelievably quick restoration of his mind and his thoughts when he gets knocked down. I mean, the horrific knockdown at the end of,
I know,
at the start of round 12 in the first fight.
Mm. It's one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen.
I mean, he looked completely
in combat sports.
He looked completely knocked out.
You know, he went on the road to beat Vladimir Klitschko in a fight. He was a 6-1 underdog. Here he is on the road against Deontay Wilder, looking for all the world like he's pulling another upset.
There's a right cross that lands for Fury.
Canvas. At that moment, did anyone in this arena really think Tyson Fury was going to get up?
That is toughness, man. I can't.
He did.
And credit to Jack Reese for not stopping it. You know how many referees would get on my nerves and don't count when a guy goes down like that? Credit to Jack Reese for counting.
That's the best comment anyone's made all night. That's exactly right. Jack Reese comported himself perfectly.
Hey, guys, I thought the fight was over when Deontay Wilder dropped Fury.
Let's take another look at it, and no one would blame you for thinking that, because it sure looked like it. Not only did he land a terrific right hand, but the left hook follow-up to it, landed, and then his head hit the canvas.
Incredible!
Maybe the hitting of the canvas woke him up. Because the left hook looked like it knocked him out. Even Deontay, by his reaction, thinks it's over.
Yeah.
Look at the reaction Deontay gives.
And we'll take yet another look at it. You know, the right hand, this one, thrown straighter, a roundhouse right hand.
And that's what we've been talking about. The straight shot is the one where he gets leverage on it. And Deontay thinks it's over in that moment.
Yeah.
He got up, shook himself, told the referee he was fine. I think the referee couldn't quite believe that he was fine.
As crazy as it sounds, it was like, you know, you watch the wrestling and you see The Undertaker sit up. It was like something like that. Yeah. It's like something out of a movie, you know?
And the obvious pride and relish that he takes in it all. I mean, that's... And I suppose the worry is, bit like Muhammad Ali, you know, so was WB said it yet, each man kills the thing he loves. Sometimes the thing, the thing he loves kills them.
Mm.
And, you know, the hope would be that he wouldn't stay there that much longer. You know, maybe this next fight would do it.
I think in the back of his mind, I think he's thinking of Joshua. I think that fight is something that he still wants. I know Usyk is kind of the be-all and end-all at the moment, but Anthony Joshua, still, he is a name. He's a global name. Yeah. And that kind of essentially all-British heavyweight clash has been something that has been spoken about for years.
Yeah, although Fury always calls himself Irish.
He does.
He says it was easier. It was easier to win the world heavyweight title than to get an Irish passport.
He fought amateur as well for Ireland as
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But I think that if that fight was to go ahead, I think it'd be bigger than the Usyk fight. Funnily enough,
Well, your man's very much in a downward curve now. I think.
Yeah, it's quite worrying.
He's punch shy, and you know, he had this. He glided along for a period, Joshua.
Yeah.
And once he was shown to be vulnerable, once that was stripped away, I think that was a huge blow to his ego. Whereas with Fury's just a true fighting man. I mean, if he wasn't in the ring, I could see him, you know, in those documentaries about fighting travellers, like out there as the king of the gypsies, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know,
lifting the big urn full of cash and setting it down.
Yeah. What do you say, me dad? My dad as well, he's got a history of that.
Oh, his dad was a bare knuckle fighter.
Bare knuckle fighter.
Yeah.
100% bare knuckle fighter.
Was it his dad who gouged the man's eye out?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Lovely man. To be absolutely fair, it was only the one eye.
But yeah, no, his dad is a character.
And who were your first impressions?
My first impressions, I would say, would have been the likes of maybe De Niro, Jeff Stelling,
right.
Ferguson. I'm a big, you know, I'm a massive football fan. Yeah. So it would have been those kind of characters. The likes of De Niro, Pesci and Pacino were the first. My brother was an actor and he was in movies like War of the Buttons, Into the West as a kid.
Was he? Right.
Yeah, he was. He was
a good looking one, obviously.
Fabulous looking. Yeah.
Oh, I apologize.
But no, he was an actor and he liked to do impressions. He also liked to sing. He sang karaoke as well. One of the karaoke champions in Swords, County Dublin. He used to sing the likes of Dino, Frank, you know, all the Rat Pack. But he was an actor from an early age. So he had a big influence on me. Sometimes it was a bit of a bad influence because he showed me Goodfellas when I was 9 years old.
Right, yeah.
What a movie. Didn't win the Oscar.
Shock. But Shawshank didn't win anything in 94 either.
They gave it to Philadelphia because it was worthy. It was about HIV and Hanks, you know, all of that. It was a tearjerker. But I mean, Goodfellas must be one of the greatest movies ever made. Ever since I was a little kid, all I want to be was a gangster. But
I think it is, yeah.
Don't let Joe do impressions. He did a Cork impression yesterday and there was a Kerry accent came out.
Was that right?
Well, I have a bit of Cork blood in me. You'll be interested in this, and to you as well. My grandfather from Blackpool in Cork, massive hurling man, but he used to play with Christy Ring. He used to play with Christy Ring underage, kind of hurling in Cork.
That's a boost. That's a boost.
Yeah.
That was a boost.
And so you were doing De Niro and you're doing around the house and just getting laughs.
And then family members.
Yeah.
Like any impressionist will tell you, they did impressions of their aunties and uncles. And that's what I used to do at, you know, the weddings and the christenings and the 40th birthday parties. I mean, I remember my parents.
Do one of your uncles.
I do one of your uncles. Now I'll do my Uncle Jimmy now, and he talks very much like that, and he's from Whitehall. And come here now, I want to tell you. And that's my Uncle Jimmy, you know, he's my godfather. And then my Uncle Jerry, God rest his soul, he passed away last year, and he was proper character. And he used to talk like that, you know. I'm from Whitehall. I like to say I'm from Dunnycarney. And he had the most infectious laugh. I used to do his laugh from a mile. He used to laugh like this. But I used to do all those characters, so, you know.
It must be, you know, a constant sound effects in your house. You know, you're sitting up in the study, you know. And
well, in my house, the attic is converted, and that was kind of my dad's hub. My dad is, you know, he's very much kind of a nerdy guy. Like, he loved his Star Trek, he loved comic books, and he would all, he'd work in the attic as well, and he'd be playing games up there. And my mom was downstairs. She was cooking dinner one of the evenings, and they weren't speaking to each other, as parents do. I think they had an argument the night before and weren't talking. So I was in the landing, and my brother told me, just go to the landing there, call up to dad, as mom. So I went, Charlie. And then I called downstairs as my dad, Chair. There you have it, the two of them. Me, the line. No, you called me. What are you talking about? What are you talking? You called me. The two of them made up. So,
so you were there. You're influencing behind the scenes.
I thought you were going to say you did apologies. Sorry enough.
Yeah.
We could hire him. You could hire Al for us. Amazing. If you did apologies.
It's amazing the things that people are interested in, you know, become fascinated in.
Mm.
You know, most people drift into, like, they become a bank clerk, or they, you know, they go to a building site, or they say, and then you've got people who like to, after a day at work, jump in the car, drive out to the airport,
and look at the planes.
And look at the airplanes. Mm. Or people who go and stand at train stations taking the numbers down of the trains as they come in.
Yeah.
You know, some people like to hang upside down from the ceiling with an orange in their mouth, you know, being whipped by a a nun.
I like where you jump from train.
See, that was Dion's. That was Dion's fantasy. But sharing
that privately with you, Joe.
Or a child who is fixated with, you know, trying to swallow a sword. Or, I mean, I saw a man recently who can swallow anything and then pull it out through his belly button.
What?
And so, yeah. And so imagine, you know, the amount of, because it's a very individual thing what you do. You spend like thousands and thousands and because what the listener can't see is how your face changes for each impression. Your face goes with it.
Well, the interesting fact about that is when you're learning the voice, essentially the mannerisms, there's no step-by-step process. The mannerisms actually come naturally with the voice, so you morph into the character. It's very strange. It's like, it's method acting in a sense.
So when you would do Ferguson, would you become angry and intimidating?
I say it's like that now. I'd be very tense and talking about a current squad. Everybody wants to know what my thoughts are on the current crop of players. I'd say it's terrible. That's the truth. You know, unless it's very, you know, you have to come across very, you're disinterested, you know, even though you're interested in that. But Trump, for me, that's the one that has all of the mannerisms. Because it's very like that. And, you know, to the listeners, I'm tilting my neck. You know, and it does take a strain, but I have to do it when I'm doing Trump because it brings out the best impression, in my opinion, and that is the truth. You know, and it really is great. It's fantastic. You know, and for selfish reasons, sometimes I think if he's the president again, I might make more money. So even though the world will be inflamed.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
it's the effortless, it's the effortless move from one to the other. I mean,
yeah,
one that I was very taken by, and you know, it's almost uncomfortable watching it is the Mark Wahlberg, because you perfectly capture that slightly trying to think, was a slightly feminine, spooky.
Yeah, feminine and exasperated. Yeah. You know, like you're talking like that, all right. You know, it's like he's just come out of the gym. Even though he lives in the gym, you know, you're talking like that all the time. All right. You know, this is how he conveys emotions when he's acting. You know, when he's in front of the camera. That's what he does. Okay. All right. Okay. How can a person who's got the body of an Adonis sound as if he's very unfit? I don't get it. But there's
and that's his stick. That's exactly the way he talks.
Yeah.
In movies, even if he's sitting at the table.
Yeah. And he mumbles a lot as well. I thought he was very good in The Fighter, but I found you know, some scenes where he's talking to Amy Adams. He's going like that. He's like, you know, there's my brother Dick, you know, and all that, you know. He says a pile for me, but I don't know what to do about it. Like, what?
He was Irish Mickey Ward was one of the hardest guys.
One of the toughest guys, yeah.
I mean, that sort of a man who was genuinely prepared to fight to the death.
Yeah. And who's resilient. You
know, do not stop this fight. Like, yeah. Do not stop this fight.
Massively so.
Oh, man.
He's a legend.
I mean, I don't think he was ever knocked out. I don't think he was. I think, I mean, he suffered terrible punishment, but he never stopped.
I don't know. He wasn't knocked out.
He never stopped.
No.
And, I mean, I can remember that, the trilogy of fights in the boardwalk with Arturo Gatti.
Yeah.
And the crowd were so caught up in the violence.
Yeah.
You know, the really obscene violence of that fight, where you were constantly, oh Jesus, you could hardly look.
I was quite surprised they didn't showcase those fights in the movie.
Yeah,
because that's when you think of that trilogy.
How could you possibly repeat that?
I know. Movie? Yeah.
Just look at this.
Unbelievable.
Can you believe there's still a minute and a half to go in the round? Gatti blinking away the blood in his right eye. Can't see out of the right eye. Vicious body shots by Gatti. Ward nods as if to say, come on, come on. Come on, let's fight.
Stop, stop. Now, Gatti's trying to get a break. Watch it go right back to the body. That's where he's going to the body. You know, you dream of fights, I guess, but very seldom do they live up to the expectation. This is even more than you can dream of. Just imagine if you bought a ticket. Stop it, Frank. You can stop it any time. Arturo Gatti's out on his feet. Frank Cappuccino's going to let him keep going.
Gatti doesn't even have the strength to tie Ward up.
And Ward is tied. And here comes Gatti back.
Less than 10 seconds in the round. Gatti's going to survive the round.
Should be the round of the century.
Those were things that you would never forget. You know, and the crowd were so caught up in it that they started fighting. I mean, I remember the chairs and the attacking each other.
Mm.
And, I mean, Mickey Ward, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
The worst nightmare. I mean, and Arturo Gatti looking over thinking he surely isn't going to come out of his corner again. This has got to, please God, let this be over.
But
Mickey Ward is coming back on. Yeah. Goes, oh, fuck, here he is again.
You can see that in Katie Taylor when she fights.
Yeah.
You think she's down and out, like she looks tired, she's, you know, she's gassing out. And then out of nowhere, she's like a zombie and she hits a wonderful combination against an opponent. She did that against Chantel Cameron last week. like for me, one of the greatest athletes this country has ever produced, hands down.
And a complete obsessive. Like, I was speaking to someone close to the camp, at the Three Arena, because I was doing I compared that gig for Gaza in the Three Arena.
Yeah.
A few days after the Katie fight.
Yeah.
And so it's the same security crew there and all. And they were saying, you know, they were talking about her, just in the way you are, about how remarkable she is. They were saying, her life is exclusively boxing and training. Everything else is obliterated. Like, she doesn't have any distractions of any kind. Apparently, she has a very close relationship with her mum.
Yeah, she does.
That's it. Apart from that, she is a fighter, like a crusader, clean living. And I suppose when you're in huge fights like that, where you're probably against a slightly better opponent, you know, your guarantee is that you've left no stone unturned, and that you've, you know, and of course, I mean, her post match interviews are they're very special.
Well,
this is such a contrast, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, you have to devise some sort of plan, and that's what I did. You know, there was 6 months and a difference, and she's an unbelievable competitor. I'm sure she'll be back here. Yeah, hopefully, you know, touch wood, we'll have Croke Park, and it'll be absolutely spectacular. And, yeah, just want to thank everyone, and thank you too for having me on. It's a, you know, it's a great podcast, and I really do enjoy it. And this is when, you know, this is when the balloon dies out.
But I love her.
You know, there aren't many Muhammad Ali's around who can fight the fight and then talk the talk. I mean, well, she's very much a fighter.
I've spoken to people close to her and I said, look,
RTL, if I ever do a video with her, I'd
just put her in the ring with me and just let her beat the hell out of me for that impression. But she's amazing.
When you're going, I suppose someone like Katie, if you're going to impersonate her, you start just with the noise. There's a constant background noise when she talks. It's like a...
And there's a bit, you know, you have to keep it like that, and then you kind of have to roll with it, and then it gets very like that, and it gets a little bit fast. So like when you say a word like fast, you know, it's very, very fast, you know.
And like whatever you're, because it must be, it's very difficult not to laugh looking at your face when you're doing it. But whatever you're doing, working on an impression. So let's say, for example, you wanted for some, you know, fetishistic reason, you know, to imitate Dion. Do you do it in front of the mirror?
No, in the car. If I'm driving.
So give us your sort of method.
My method is I'll be in the car, like I drop my daughter to school every morning, and she's in the back, and she knows I'm a lunatic. So,
who are you working on at the moment?
At the moment, Christopher Walken is my new. It's because a lot of people request it. But so when you're talking like that, you gotta do walking, but you have to provide some sort of whisper. You're talking ass, Christopher Walken. You know, and I'll never quit acting. It was because I'm too good.
What's this, the movie you said? Because that sounds exactly, he says, do it. Things to do in Denver when you're dead.
What's that? Is that?
you got to watch that. That's Christopher, peak Christopher Walken.
Is okay.
Things to do in Denver when you're dead.
Yeah.
He's a mob boss.
He plays a mob boss in a lot of movies, though, doesn't he, Joe?
But in this one, he has very, very serious disability.
Okay.
And he's very unwell, nursing around the clock. But it's classic Christopher Walken, and you'll pick up a load of stuff from that. Do it.
Well, the Martin McDonagh movie he was in, Seven Psychopaths, and I think he's held at gunpoint in the desert, and they tell him to put his hands up, or so the guy with the gun says, put your hands up, and he goes, no, put your hands up, I don't feel like it. Just brilliant, you know.
His voice is so attractive, so it just isn't brings it? You in. Like, yeah. But I remember when you started, there was a time last year we were sending me these voice messages.
Yeah.
Because you started to see how much of a kick I was getting from them. But you were just started to work on Christopher Walken, as I recall, and you said to me, you rang up and you said that you started to work on Christopher Walken by realizing that there were a lot of similarities between Dunphy and Walken, and you moved. So if you would start with, if you would just, you know, the way you sent me the voice.
Well, if you blend it, so, you know, you're talking... We're back to Dunphy again, and there are similarities because I'm planning going into Christopher Walken. It's the most eclectic cup of coffee you've ever had in your entire life. Where did you get this coffee from?
Yeah. And are there any similarities between Dunphy and Trump, do you think, when you're doing
it? Yes, 100%, yeah. See, there's so many, like, Harry Kane and Rio Ferdinand.
Right.
You know.
When you're doing Rio, you're talking like that, you know, and it's unbelievable. And he's got, like, kind of deep breaths and he talks about Man United. And then, of course, when you're doing Harry Kane, you're talking like that. But, you know, I think it's, you know, it's fantastic, it's unbelievable. So, I could have played for Ireland, and that's it. So, yeah, let's go.
The Kane thing, he does something like, it's almost like a speech impediment. What are you doing to get that?
I just have to do that impression. A lot of people are giving me and other people who impersonate Harry Kane a bit of flack for doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they think you're mimicking something.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and but he's become, as football impressions go, he's become a popular one.
Yeah.
You know. Amongst the football impressionists. But I mean, one of my favourite ones, I go back to, like, you know, having a laugh about Trump being president again and me doing the impression for 4 years or whatever. But when I was with Joe there, and I worked with a guy called Christian von Strenghair, who was just Christian von Strenghair,
genius.
A Norwegian, he's like a graphics editor, just amazing.
He used to do head swap videos,
and they were just amazing. We did a video together. We did an Ireland's Euros dream. It was Ireland's on the stream, and it was me doing Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane in 2016, and we were aiming for it to get into the charts and everything, but it went viral.
Yeah.
But I did a lot of content as Louis van Gaal when he was manager of Manchester United.
So I would do videos with Christian, and I thought he was a fantastic talent, and he could stitch my head onto John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever, and we do Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive, you know, a couple of games before I got the eventual check, but we did videos like that, and it was fantastic.
But in my mind, I was also a Man United fan at the time, and the football was torture, but, you know... On the other hand, I was thinking, oh, this is great for social media. He's such a character, you know.
Yeah, but when you see something like the Beckham film coming out on Netflix as well, then, do you think, right, there's a character?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's an impression that a lot of people have done for years, you know, doing David Beckham and, you know, constantly talking about the boot being thrown at you as well. And, yeah, you know, for me... I don't think there's nothing really to add to David Beckham. I think he's quite vanilla.
Right, I do.
Yeah.
Well, he's a brand.
He's a brand,
very, very banal.
But go back to when you were young and you were doing them. Did any of your impressions get you into trouble?
No, not particularly.
Like, were you doing teachers or anything?
No, I wouldn't get in trouble. I do remember in sixth year, when Jedward were a big thing. Jedward was also one of the first impressions I did, right? And I graduated from school in 2010. And I remember our school chaplain, Sister Jer, had found out... I posted a couple of videos on YouTube around February 2010. And they went viral in Portmarnock, where I'm from. But the teachers in the school and the principal got wind of the videos.
They'd seen the students, kind of heard of them, sharing them online. And she brought me in to do with Thought of the Day on Friday morning, which was like a little, she'd always go on the intercom and she'd read out a prayer and she'd play a song.
So you came in and did this out of
the
school intercom?
She went along with this prank. She goes, oh, they're going to fall for it. It's the school chaplain. And I did Jedward in Portmoney Community School. And I was like, it's so amazing to be here. Oh my God, here with Sister Jer. She's so cool. She's playing Friday I'm in Love by The Cure. She plays every Friday. But everyone went bananas
really
in the school. A thousand students. They thought they were running to the principal's office. They thought Jedward were in there doing the intercom announcement.
What age is Jedward?
They'd be around the same age as himself. Yeah.
Are they still on the go?
They're around, yeah.
They're still on the go. But that's when they were like, they were bubblegum in Ireland at that point. They were popular, you know. They'd just come off the X Factor.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care. And though my pocket may be empty, I'd be a millionaire.